Welcome to the first episode of the PRT podcast brought to you by the Pain Reprocessing Therapy Center. My name is John Gasanica, and I'm a psychotherapist and coach specializing in the treatment of chronic symptoms. Alongside my work with patients, I also serve as the Director of Clinical Research and Development at the Pain Psychology Center in Los Angeles, California, where I team up with medical schools, healthcare companies, and government agencies to conduct research and improve the treatment of chronic conditions with psychology. I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by some of the best minds in this field, and I've been able to witness the tools for treating chronic symptoms advance at an incredible rate. My goal for this podcast is to introduce some of these tools and show you how I teach my patients how to use them to get out of pain faster. Today, you'll be hearing a session I conducted with a patient named Anna, who, like many people, struggles to find a sense of relaxation and ease in her recovery from pain. In my personal recovery, I similarly struggled with a feeling of anxiety, and it's something I needed to overcome before I was able to break my cycle of chronic symptoms. There are a few ways to overcome this hurdle. In future episodes, we'll talk about some of the ways that unprocessed emotion can get in the way of an overall sense of ease. But oftentimes, there's a simpler fix that can get your nervous system headed in the right direction. Today, you'll hear Anna use a new variation of a fairly simple tool called somatic tracking to take a big step forward after years of trying to recover. To help break down the techniques being used with Anna, I'm going to bring in a friend of mine and a chronic pain expert in her own right, Daniela Deutsch. Before we get started, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is presented solely for general information and entertainment purposes. It is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, therapist, or other professional healthcare service. If you have a specific medical concern or question, please contact your personal healthcare provider. With that said, let's meet my first guest. So my guest today is Daniela Deutsch. Daniela is the co-founder of the Pain Reprocessing Therapy Center, where thousands of doctors, therapists, nurses, and coaches have learned how to treat and eliminate their patients' chronic conditions with psychological tools. I'm also lucky enough to be working with Daniela on a clinical trial at the University of Colorado Medical School, where she treats racially and ethnically diverse adults dealing with chronic symptoms. Hey, Daniela, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
For sure. I'm really excited to have you here on our first episode because I recorded a session with a client and I used a lot of tools from PRT. And given that you've co-wrote a 21-hour training on PRT, I thought you'd be the perfect person to come in and have some notes on what I'm doing.
I'd love to. That sounds really fun.
So I've been using this acronym PRT. It stands for Pain Reprocessing Therapy. Can you tell people a little bit about what that means?
Sure. So pain reprocessing therapy is an evidence-based pain recovery therapy. And the reason I'm calling it really a pain recovery therapy is because it's different than typical traditional pain management therapies, where the goal is really to help people recover from pain and not just manage their pain. And PRT, or pain reprocessing therapy, is a system of techniques or tools that help kind of retrain the brain to interpret sensations correctly and break the cycle of chronic pain.
I know when I first got into this, really to look at my own symptoms before I even became a clinician, I was very, very skeptical. And I think one of the things that attracted me to PRT was the evidence base behind it. Can you tell us a little bit about how PRT's performed in clinical settings?
PRT's performed really well. Our first study was published in JAMA Psychiatry, and the study involved taking patients with chronic back pain and giving them either pain reprocessing therapy, care as usual. And after the treatment, I believe the numbers were like 97 or 96% of people had a reduction in symptoms and 67% were either pain-free or nearly pain-free. And right now we're actually in the middle of conducting a new study comparing PRT to CBT. And I know, John, you're involved in a bunch of other studies that I don't have involvement in, but I have a hunch that it's probably going to perform really well, although we don't really have any idea since we're not allowed to, you know, look at numbers or results or any of that. So we're not really sure, but I have a lot of confidence in PRT.
Yeah, I think the one you mentioned, that 66 or 67% of people got completely out of pain. I think one of the cool things about that study, and this comes from our colleague Yoni Ashar, is it really was the first study that even had a category for people who completely got out of pain. All the other studies were pain management or pain decreases, but this was actually people who got completely out of pain. And that's really our goal. That's my goal as a clinician. And that's my goal when I'm dealing with some of the patients you'll hear in the podcast. So why don't we take a listen to our first patient today and get an understanding about what she's going through.
Sounds good.
So hey, Anna.
Hi there.
Why don't you take us from the start? Tell us how your pain began.
So I've been in pain about 3 years, but in thinking about it, it might have been closer to four. And it started with a pinched nerve while I was biking. And then it was just in my neck. I'd had them before, and then it just never went away. And it got worse. And then I started getting pain down both arms, so nerve pain into my hands. And at a certain point, that got so bad that, you know, when I woke up first thing in the morning, I wouldn't be able to close my hand around a glass. I'm young, you know, 40s, and I'm extremely active. So this was not a good thing. So kind of feeling like everything was falling apart.
How did that affect gripping the handlebars of your bike, or how did that affect biking in general?
Well, I stopped. Very tough. It meant that having to change a lot of things. So, you know, I used to sleep on my side, and all of a sudden I could not sleep on my side because I'd wake up. So there were a lot of physio appointments, a lot of doctor's appointments, very frustrating. And I'm someone who deals with anxiety, and the way I deal is through physical activity. So this is, you know, compounding the stress you're feeling about the pain is the fact that there's no outlet. Fortunately, through very dedicated physiotherapists and time, I managed to get the nerve pain to a place where it was not comfortable, but much more manageable. So I can get back on my bike, still dealing with the neck pain, still dealing with pain up into the back of my head, headaches. And then it's just been, since then, a parade to some extent of physiotherapists and specialists and doctors. And some have been super helpful and awesome, and others less so. But even with the ones that have been awesome, you know, you reach a point where you kind of feel like you're hitting your head against a brick wall. Like you're doing all of the exercises. They have told you everything they know. And this winter, I had a bit of a breakdown, 40 minutes, an hour every morning doing exercises and stretches, in addition to the ones I would do normally just to feel good, like completely obsessive. And it's really now at a place where the pain is still there. It's not where I want it to be. I would like to get off all of the pain medication. I would like to, you know, feel that I have this much more under control, but I understand that this is not something that's going to happen overnight.
Wow, there's so many things to your story that I relate to and that I've seen in so many of my patients. That horrible cycle in the beginning of when the pain's so bad, when you're sleeping, you're not sleeping well. And just what a bad night of sleep will do to your mood that day, to your anxiety that day. I can imagine feeling so trapped, not only not being able to sleep well, but like your one thing that helped you take stress away, which was bike riding, getting taken away.
Absolutely. And that was actually the trigger point was when I had knee surgery last year for a torn meniscus. So I couldn't swim. I couldn't use the elliptical. And that was it. That was sort of the breaking point. There was a night of, you know, sitting on the couch in absolute tears.
Oh.
And then just being like, okay, I got to figure this out because this is not where I want to be.
Yeah. Gosh, there's nothing more traumatizing for the human brain than feeling trapped. And it sounds like you were just feeling completely boxed in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, I think that what you did was really powerful. I like how with Anna, you really got right to the root of her problem. I can see that you kind of immediately understood her frustration around not being active and not having control. And I remember you said something about that feeling of being trapped. Like she seems like a very active and proactive and smart and self-aware and really kind of a classic neuroplastic pain patient, right? That perfect example of a classic client that I always see. She's really awesome. And I remember the first question you asked her in this clip was, how does that pain affect like gripping the handlebars? Mm-hmm. And at first, when you asked that question, I wasn't sure why you decided to go in that direction right away as opposed to somewhere else. But then as I continued to listen, I understood that you actually immediately understood that cycling and movement were so important to her and that her pain interfering with her movement and her control would be so incredibly distressing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is an easy empathy case for me because when I had pain, it took surfing out of my life for a couple of years and it was incredibly frustrating. you know, they've done studies. There was this one study where there was this car crash, I believe it was in Canada, where some people, there's a lot of fog on the road and some people got stuck behind a truck and then cars would pile up because they couldn't see in the fog. And the people who were trapped in their cars watching the accident had extremely high levels of PTSD. But the people who could get out of their cars, they couldn't do anything to prevent the cars from crashing into the truck. Their levels of PTSD were decreased. So it's one of these studies that show us how important it is to feel like we have agency and mobility. And it's one of the reasons I asked Anna about feeling trapped. So Daniela, now you know what Anna's going through. When you see a case like this, what's usually your first step after you hear what we've heard?
So usually my first step is to figure out if PRT is a good fit for her. And this would be if she has neuroplastic pain or basically if her pain is not caused by physical damage or disease.
And maybe in a future date, we'll do a full podcast about assessment of chronic pain. That'll probably be helpful. But for today's podcast, we want to just jump into the treatment.
So usually my next step is to really check in right away with clients about their comfort level with self-regulation and kind of reducing their own anxiety and what's their anxiety level right now and what's their ability to relax and regulate. And the reasons I do this is because A, if they're having a hard time relaxing, that's going to want to be a goal since they're probably in a state of fear pretty often. And B, I want to know if they have the resources and the skills available to them to really help them regulate before I start launching into any exposure exercise that's going to be anxiety provoking and fear inducing, right? I want to know if I need to start teaching them just some basic breathing or mindfulness or regulation before I dive into anything head first.
Totally. What you said about helping them calm down before the exposure, resource before the exposure, you know, one of the things we know from a neuroscience perspective is that chronic pain is caused by chronically high levels of cortisol, right? It sensitizes our nervous system. That's the whole idea behind a sensitized central nervous system. Mm-hmm. And so not only are we teaching the client to be able to handle the tools better in the moment, but we're also teaching them life skills on how do we decrease this level of cortisol overall? And how do we start introducing some of these other hormones in their brain, like oxytocin, like serotonin, that are going to help them feel better and desensitize their nervous system? So let's check in with Anna. Let's check in on her anxiety levels and how she's able to calm down. Where people get the most stuck, and we're absolutely to blame for this, chronic pain therapist, we give people 10,000 pages of information and 16 exercises to do and expect them to feel like a sense of ease while they're doing it. And I think the problem that people get stuck in is that they do their homework very diligently, but the mindset in which they do it is off. And it's almost like your neuroplasticity goes out the window when things are too serious. Do you feel like sometimes you get too serious with your pain work?
I think I get too serious with most things. I feel that I can power my way through it. And that's worked really well dealing with anxiety, with other things. Just, you know, you just do the work and you push through. But I kind of get the feeling that my body is telling me that that's not the right way, not necessarily the right or wrong, but that that's not the best way doing it going forward. Trying to, you know, be the Kool-Aid man running through that wall.
Saying, oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All of a sudden, the wall's hitting back. Oh. And so, yes, I definitely think I approach this with the idea that I am going to succeed and I'm going to do this and I'm going to check that box and I will get it done. And that doesn't always work.
What are you feeling right now physically, just as we jump into this? How do you feel in your neck and your body?
I have a really hard time relaxing. I noticed this when I first went to the physiotherapist, and my physiotherapist would tell me to relax a muscle, and I couldn't tell whether it was relaxed or not. I can't feel my body. I suspect that there's a lot of tension, but totally. As relaxed as I get. That's why it's a pretty good day. It's a beautiful day outside. So it's a Friday afternoon, you know, so not too bad right now.
I'm always blown away by how well people do at masking it. Like when I'm talking to you right now, you seem totally calm and relaxed. Has that just been years of building up that ability to mask it?
My natural state, I think, has just come to a point where my resting state is one of tension. You know, occasionally I can get, if I'm in a yoga class or, you know, if I'm in a kayak on a lake with my family, I can get to a point where I'm like, oh, this is relaxed. But if I don't think about it, my body will tense up. The default will be tense, even if there's nothing to be tense about.
That's exactly what we'll work on. We're going to affect that default state today, because I want you to think of the reps you get with your homework are not irrelevant, but they're just not very high impact when you're feeling this sense of stress. I think of like the tension you feel in your body, even if it's that kind of numb tension that you don't even notice right now, almost like a bunch of fire alarms going off. And then your pain is just an escalation to like a higher level of fire alarm. And so what we want to do is calm those primary fire alarms down first, so that your brain can be like, oh, we actually are safe. It would almost be like if a fire person came to your door and there were six alarms going off and you're like, no worries, there's no fire here. They'd be a little suspicious. But if like you could actually get the alarms to turn off, they'd be like, okay. So that's what we're going to do.
I love that. I relate to Anna so deeply. Anna is very wonderfully self-aware. And even though she gives off a really calm, cool, and like collected demeanor, you can tell that she's tightly wound, right? Like she's aware that she's a certain way. She even mentions that her default setting is one of tension, although she tries to relax and she wants to, and she has this like super lovely energy, which you even mentioned to her. But there's definitely a lot under the surface, right? She like reminds me of myself so much. Like I would have so much countertransference working with her, because I think at least that I come off chill and relaxed to some people, but it's because I'm like bottling it all up. Like there's this smile on my face and like I have this soft voice, but the stress is literally right beneath the surface, ready to burst. Like I'm a recovered, or maybe like actually a recovering, tightly wound human being. So I really relate to Anna deeply.
Totally. I think this is one of the reasons I wanted you on this episode, because I know we've spent a lot of time talking about our type A personalities and how we mask them and how we overcome them. So yes, I felt the same way with Anna. And you know, now that we kind of know what her makeup is like, where do you go from here? What tool do you bring in now that we're kind of moving into the more tool heavy section of the therapy?
Well, I mean, I would use somatic tracking, which is a PRT fan favorite. So that's where I would go.
And can you explain why somatic tracking is necessary at this stage, or an exposure tool in general?
Well, exposure, and I know that, John, this is something that you're a huge proponent of how exposure is such an important piece of overcoming any fear, yet so many therapists don't actually use it out of their own fear. But exposure, which somatic tracking kind of is, it's a necessary component of getting over the fear around the pain. Right? If you have fear of heights, eventually you're going to have to face being on top of something really tall to overcome that fear of heights. And with somatic tracking, we're essentially facing the fear head on, right? We're facing the pain in a new way, usually gradually or hopefully gradually, and with less fear, preoccupation, and less effort to actually change the sensation. And when we can actually observe it with effortlessness and ease and curiosity, usually during the somatic tracking exercise, the pain will change in some way. And then we ultimately gather evidence that the pain just can't possibly be caused by something physical. And the more evidence that we have, the more confident we become in the diagnosis. And like we talked about before, the more confident, the less fear, the less fear, the less pain. And so we enter this positive feedback loop.
Yeah, very similar to how chronic pain can kind of snowball in the wrong direction. We're just trying to roll that snowball in the right direction here with getting that confidence going. When you think about the pieces of somatic tracking, what part of it would you focus on most with Anna?
Well, I definitely would put a heavy focus on positive affect induction. So really focusing on helping her lighten the mood and create a genuine positive emotional state. Because yes, she has this facade that she's extremely positive and has this really light energy, and she's so likable. But just like you and I, John, there's a lot being bottled up beneath the surface, and really helping her tap into that inner calm that she has within and access that, I think will really help her experience the sensations in a way where she can feel safe and okay and have less fear around them.
Awesome. We're going to work on two tools to just settle your system. And I think you'll feel it right away, what it means to do these tools at a more even pace, a calm pace, let your brain know that you're okay. So if it feels comfortable for you, I want you to close your eyes. And we're just going to start with a tool that helps communicate on a very physical level that you're okay. And so I want you to take some nice, calm, slow inhales. And just start working on extending your exhale to be a little bit longer than the inhale. And this is a tool that you might have heard before. It's called the cyclic sigh. I want you to feel like you're breathing in on your inhale to about 90%. And just about when you're full, I want you to take one quick more inhale through your nose. And then give a nice long sighing exhale through the mouth. And just see if you can get your brain used to this pattern, the nice 90% inhale, a quick sharp inhale, and then a nice long exhale out of the mouth. And what they've shown with this breathing pattern is that it opens up these little sacs in your lungs that usually don't get opened up. And you're able to offload a little bit more carbon dioxide than usual. And it just helps balance the amount of carbon dioxide in your system at any given moment. And our bodies do this naturally when we sleep. And what this does is that it physically signals to your brain that you're okay. If you've ever seen a dog sit on a couch and give like a nice big huff, that's what they're doing. They're signaling to their brain. No predators around. And if you feel any lightheadedness or any yawns coming on, just know it's totally normal. Just the parasympathetic nervous system getting activated. Your blood pressure might drop a little bit and your brain needs a few moments to just get used to it. And how does that feel as you breathe like this?
It feels more relaxed. I can kind of feel some of the tension draining out of me. I'm draining out of my shoulders, especially in like my upper chest, and the shoulders are where I hold a lot of that tension.
So just keep up with this pace and I'll prompt you with some psychological things to think about. Think of right now as like this is the physical relaxation part of your meditation. Feel that tension just trickling away. You can almost think of it as like the cortisol draining from your system right now. And what I want you to think about as you're breathing like this, and it's okay to kind of fall back into a little bit more normal of a breathing pattern, to see if you can keep your breath slow, maybe your exhales a little bit longer. I want you to think of five things that you're grateful for in your life. And there's two caveats here. One is it can't be like you're partially grateful for it. So if there's a situation in your life where like, I should be grateful for this, throw that out. And then the second thing here is I want you to think of even little things. One of the things I eat, Skippy Creamy Peanut butter in the morning. And I just absolutely love it. Every morning it tastes good to me. And that's just something I'm really grateful for. It makes my mornings easier. And so if little things like that pop up, just let me know what you're thinking when they come up.
The first thing that I always feel grateful for is I am so lucky to have a really supportive family network around me. They're not physically close, but they are, you know, I carry them with me all the time. And that, you know, those people bring me such joy and such a sense of peace. So that is definitely something that is easy to feel grateful for.
Great. I want you to picture some of their faces right now, even some of the favorite outfits they wear that you remember them from. And now, even if it feels effortful, I want you to see if you can think of another thing on that list. What's another thing that pops up? And if it takes a little while, that's okay. Just allow your brain to search a little bit.
The other thing that comes pretty quickly to mind is the joy that I get in the very simple parts of nature. So for instance, on my bike ride, there's a route I take all the time. And there's on the way home, there's a spot that's a bridge over sort of a little bit of a lake, very small pond area. And I love just sitting there and you can hear the frogs. And if you go at sunset, you can see the sun reflecting off the water. Those locations, but also that the ability to feel peace in those locations, you know. There's nothing special about it in terms of it's not the Grand Canyon.
So picture some of those places right now. Picture the sunlight, what it looks like when you pass that on your bike. Even some of the sounds you hear, or if there's distinctive smells coming from nature, I want you to just see if you can use your senses to just feel that gratitude. And you've got three more to go. So let's see if we can bring your brain to something else, even if it's very simple.
Wow. You really were able to get her to access that inner calm and that relaxed part of her. And because we know what Anna might be like, because Anna's kind of like a mirror into our own inner selves, we know that it might not last very long, and it might be a short moment of inspiration right now. But now you have that window. You have that opening. You've created that positive emotional state, and she's almost primed to really gain a corrective experience when it comes to her pain.
So there's two things here I wanted to point out. One is exactly what you said, like that window's open now. And that's the magic behind any pain reprocessing therapy, is we're combining a physical discomfort with a sense of relaxation or with positive emotional feeling. And for people at home who listen to this recording with Anna and say, like, I can't get that relaxed, I haven't been there, that's when we want to bring in some of the other modalities, maybe some of the trauma modalities, maybe some of the other emotional repression modalities to get you to a place where you can relax. But there are some simple tools we use, and in a future podcast, we'll talk about some of the other things to get people into this state. But now that we have Anna in this relaxed place, let's hear what somatic tracking sounds like to kind of finish the job. And so this is the important pivot of the meditation. I actually want you to stop thinking right now and bring your awareness down to your heart and your chest and feel the sensation of gratitude. You'll notice a change in your heart. It'll almost feel like an energy or a flowing sensation. Do you feel that?
It feels bigger.
Amazing. Feel that expansiveness. And you'll also notice your chest start to loosen up a little bit as you feel almost like it's making room for this heart. And if we think about this neurochemically, I want you to imagine you're almost taking a serotonin bath right now. You're cleansing your system. And if we take one step further, think of it on a spiritual level. Imagine this channel that you're opening in your heart right now, breaking through the concern and the worry and the overthinking and tapping into a higher force. All those things you described for me right there, the nature, the sand between your toes, the bird sounds, it's things that the universe has provided you. And feel a sense of comfort in knowing that this has been given to you. And as you're feeling this sensation of gratitude, just see if you can almost bathe in it. Just feel it. Enjoy it. Knowing that you're setting your brain up for the most neuroplasticity you can give it, for the most calmness you can give it. And I want you to bring your awareness now to the sensation of discomfort. Do you feel any pain in your neck, any sensation in your arms?
No. Not really. A little tension in my arms, but not much. And I think probably just because of the way I'm sitting. Mostly it just feels heavy.
Good. Bring your awareness to that tension. I want you to almost think of a window being opened with all of the prep work you just did, to where your brain is open to learning new lessons right now. Just feel that tension in your arms. And see if you can interpret it a new way. Feel it like heaviness. Maybe there's some fatigue, or even feel it as a strength in your arms. See if you can give your brain a good rep of watching your arms with a sense of safety. These are mine and they're healthy. And feel powerful in your arms right now. And if you need to prime the pump a little bit, just come back to your chest and your heart and just feel that gratitude coming through. And this is the secret formula for getting out of pain, is combining this positive emotional state, this relaxed emotional state, with a little bit of discomfort and teaching your brain, hey, this alarm bell's not necessary. And how's that feel in your arms?
It's going away. I felt it a couple times after you mentioned that, and then thought about it as, you know, this is a healing sensation rather than a dangerous one. And it just kind of went away.
This is exactly what we want, is your brain's interpretation of sensations to change. Even you just saying that right now, this is a healing sensation. And you're more likely to feel that way with this overall positive feel you have in your body right now. On a gut level, you can feel safe. And that's where these new exciting cognitions come from that says, yeah, I'm healing. And just enjoy that feeling of your arms coming back to you. You're taking back control over your arms.
It was really powerful to hear somatic tracking actually work. And I think that that's really the caveat here, is that somatic tracking doesn't always work like this. It's not always this magic trick and this wave of the wand and you get the patient to access a positive emotional state and all of a sudden the fear decreases and their pain goes away. But if it does happen, it feels really good as a therapist for sure. But I try to really tame that excitement and almost warn my patient, but not in a very scary warning kind of way, almost to set the expectations that this is not always going to happen when using somatic tracking. It's not always like a magic trick. The pain isn't always automatically going to go away. In fact, usually the second time that you do somatic tracking, it doesn't work because you have that expectation that the pain is going to go away. And then you're using it as a tool to get rid of the pain, which really means you're coming at it from a place of fear.
I'm glad you said that, because when I was learning these methods and when I was trying to treat my own pain, I'd hear these recordings where people got out of pain in like one session, like we just heard. And it doesn't always happen. In fact, what makes somatic tracking successful is just feeling relaxed and in the sense of a good positive emotional state while your pain is present. And so we already won with Anna when she was feeling relaxed. Part of the end is just kind of like icing on the cake. And that'll happen sometimes. One of the things Anna said to me in that session was, I had a good day today. And so I'm dubious that this is going to work on a bad day. And I told her what I tell every one of my patients, it probably won't work this way on a bad day. You just have to work yourself up to that. And so you're going to get really good at somatic tracking on your good days. And so for some people, that's enough. And the pain goes away and the brain learns that they're going to be okay. Some people, they just have to build up their skill set and build up this base of safety so that on bad days, they can start having similar results. So thanks for coming on today, Daniela. Before we go, I want to make sure that people know how to get some visibility into your work and your training center.
Thanks so much, John. Thank you for having me. This was really fun and so exciting to get a window into your therapy practices with other patients. And honestly, I'm somewhat envious of Anna that she got to get that amazing treatment. It's something that I probably need for all of my worry. How you could reach me is at painreprocessingtherapy.com. It's really a hub for both clinicians and patients to find resources, to get additional training, to earn continuing education units. You can also follow us on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, and just get some more tips from us because we post regularly.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. Thanks, John.
On the next episode of the PRT Podcast, I'll be introducing an exciting new tool to help a patient break through one of the most common barriers to overcoming chronic symptoms. For updates, be sure to subscribe to the podcast or follow me on Instagram at johng.therapy, where I share updated research and break down the tools I use in the podcast. I want to thank our guest, Daniela Deutsch, for joining me today. You can find her training center at painreprocessingtherapy.com or on Instagram at painreprocessingtherapy. Finally, I want to give a special thank you to Anna for allowing us to broadcast a piece of your journey. If you'd like to partake in a coaching session for this podcast, or have a question to be answered on one of our mailbag episodes, message me on Instagram at johng.therapy. Thanks for listening to our first episode.